Caskey hits this one deep to left field. This has a chance. This ball is gone. It's a walk-off home run.
Now Caleb driving left side. Alley-oop to Nelson. Throws it down with two hands.
Raiders make the handoff. Keeps it running left. He's across midfield. 40, 30, 20, 10. Jalen Reiner to the house.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast. The A-State Podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, several track and field athletes getting ready to compete at the NCAA West Prelims. That's coming up over the course of the next few days. The baseball team wrapping up their season this past weekend. The Howl on Wheels events are officially underway. They started Monday night in Memphis and then Tuesday night in Paragould. There's still four more coming up. We'll go over everything that's going on with that great event. And we'll also talk about men's golf. They were at the NCAA Regionals last week in Austin and had a really nice showing at the Regionals as well. So looking forward to all that. But right now, we're going to start out with our extremely special guest this week, a guy that in just under a year at Arkansas State's turned into one of my favorite people at A-State. A fantastic guy, number one, but he's doing a great job for us. He's our senior associate AD for compliance, NIL initiatives, student services, and whatever else comes up.
It's just full-on utility player.
It's Taylor Hall. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Matt.
Well, it's great to have you here. Brad had mentioned this, and I think this is a great time for you to kind of come in, because we've seen the college athletic world just change dramatically over the course of the last 3 or 4 years especially. But you have a really unique perspective coming in from the University of Alabama, which is where you came from a year ago. I want to get into some stuff here, but I do want to kind of start off with how you got here. I think it's a great story because you do have that relationship with Jeff Purinton. He trusts you tremendously. And, you know, there's a reason he reached out to you when this position came up. So why, beyond the relationship with Jeff, did Arkansas State seem like a attractive place to you?
Well, you know, I mean, compliance is something I've done now for going on 10 years. And I think the people that do it best generally rely on their ability to form relationships. And so that goes with our coaches, our student athletes, our other administrators across campus, external folks, third-party corporate sponsors, obviously NIL. We've got agents now across the board. So I think having a relationship with Jeff and being able to lean on that and kind of understand what his expectations were, what his hopes and goals were for the department. Arkansas State's got a lot of really good momentum in a lot of different areas with Dr. Shields and Dr. White, our provost. It just seems like across the board, Jonesboro and Arkansas State is growing and moving in the right direction. And it was something I was excited to have an opportunity from a career advancement standpoint and from, you know, just jump on the right ship at the right time and ride the wave.
Let's back it up probably several steps for Matt and kind of tell folks about, you know, your upbringing. And so kind of from there to, I mean, you go to law school. So then what made you make the insane decision to go the compliance route, which I think you had to be nuts to do?
Yeah. So this is actually kind of a funny story. I actually chose to go the compliance route as I was choosing to go to law school. I went to undergrad at Georgia, originally from Washington, D.C., born, raised 18 years, and decided to go south for college. Kind of knew I wanted to go to law school from there, but wasn't exactly sure where, wasn't exactly sure what I wanted to do. Any law student will tell you the first question they get asked is, what kind of law do you want to practice? And you really don't have an answer to that going in. You won't until you get the chance to take some of your bar classes and some of your electives and figure out where your niche is. But for me, going in, you know, I'd kind of applied to several different law schools. I got in at the Charleston School of Law, private, small boutique law school. It's not attached to the College of Charleston. Most people ask, oh, you went to the College of Charleston, when I tell them I went to Charleston School of Law, and I just say yes. but it's funny, Charleston has the Medical University of South Carolina, the Charleston School of Law, the College of Charleston, and the Citadel. If you rolled it all into one, you'd pretty much have Texas A&M in a very saturated peninsula with traffic and tourists, and it'd be very difficult to do that. So we kind of broke everything out, and there's two really great graduate programs in Charleston. It wasn't super high on my list. I had applied to some schools back home, and University of Maryland, applied to the University of Alabama. Ended up choosing Charleston because of a conversation I had while I was still going through the process. And the dean at the time, who's now Dean Emeritus, Andy Abrams, actually invited me to Charleston and said, let's go to lunch. I'd love to show you around and we want you here. It was kind of an admitted students type thing. It's not very big, so they didn't have huge admissions pushes. They didn't have big on-campus weekends or anything like that. And to me, as a senior at Georgia with very little else to do, wrapping up my senior year in college, I thought a free weekend at Charleston sounded great. So I went and I, let him take me to lunch and we just kind of got to talking. We went to a sports bar. You know, he just casually weaves in. I was asking him about his past and where he had worked and what he had done and gone to school. And he was just like, yeah, you know, I practiced for a little while and did some private sector work. And then, you know, I was the athletic director at the College of Charleston for 14 years. And I kind of hit pause and said, that seems like a pretty big jump. And what happened? How did that work out? He knew he had a hook in me at that point. Obviously, we had talked a lot of sports and I had him explain to me the path he had gone down. And he said, you know, if you come here, you know, I've set people up at the NCAA in the postgraduate program. I've set people up at the College of Charleston. I know people at the Citadel. If you come here, I'd love to help you get started on that path. So you come in. I took his word for it. So
there you go.
That's what I did. And that first semester, he said, come in, get your feet wet, figure out how to do law school. And I did really well. And I was in his office probably that first week of the second semester. And within a couple of weeks, I was having lunch with the assistant AD for compliance at the Citadel and ended up working for him for 2.5 years.
How quickly did you get to Alabama from there?
Yes, I worked at the Citadel for 2.5 years. When I graduated, I had an opportunity to stay, but I also was presented with a couple other opportunities. And the one that stood out, ironically enough, was Montana State. So my fiance at the time and I moved to Montana, just two of us and the dog. We drove across the country and decided this is where we wanted to start. And Montana State had a really strong FCS program, something I had familiar with, the FCS level at the Citadel. And I wanted to take on some leadership opportunity and some, there was no one else. I mean, I did compliance for the entire department and worked really closely with our academics people. And it was trial by fire to an extent, but it made me better. And then within about 15 months, I had an opportunity to interview at Alabama and was there in August of 2018.
It's a pretty fast track you were on.
Yeah, I won't say it was by design, but we did know, you know, leaving Charleston, leaving the Citadel, that like Montana State was going to be an opportunity that would get us to where we wanted to go and to give us kind of give me some perspective and just really good across the board experience and grow as a professional and learn without a lot of cover. So, I mean, I was doing it by myself and we had somebody else helping with financial aid and I had a supervisor, but she was not doing full-time compliance work. She was really just there as a resource and I had really good experiences and opportunities to grow from her. And Leon Costello, who's still the athletic director there, always made it a point to make sure I felt valued and give me opportunities. And we knew it was the right decision. It required a cross-country move away from our family and all of our friends for a little over a year. But it was clearly the right one. It gave me some great opportunity to go to a place like Alabama, meet people like Jeff, work with people like Greg, who are operating at a very high level in our industry. So
that's what, when you go from a one-man band touching everything to an organization the size of Alabama, what was it initially to do there in Tuscaloosa?
Yeah, so I was hired at Alabama in a primarily recruiting role. And it was wild to me because, you know, when you have a full-time job and you're focused on one area of compliance, I was like, this is awesome. You know, it was high level. We were dealing with really high-profile recruits, really high-profile coaches. Obviously, at that level, everything you do matters and everything you do is under a microscope. And it's a high-profile school and a high-profile conference in a state without pro sports. So, like, you really have to value your role and take it seriously. But, yeah, for me to kind of narrow in on one component of the job I had been doing for several years made for a really nice transition. And then we had some staff changes and opportunities presented itself there. And I was able to kind of take on some more over time. And then with the name, image, likeness stuff that started to come out, they felt confident enough in me to kind of let me spearhead that project too. So, you know, I've had really great supervisors and really great opportunities to grow everywhere I've been. And that's true of the Citadel to Montana State to Alabama, and now here with Jeff, back to your original point, is I've been very fortunate and very blessed to have some people invest in me. So I've done my best to give back, work as hard as I can.
Interesting how he puts that project, NIL, but it's a
Yeah.
It's an ongoing project.
Yeah, and it's one that's not going to end. It's one thing for NIL to be introduced into collegiate athletics, which is huge for everybody. It's a game changer. But especially for you to see it at Alabama at a time where there's such high-profile athletes there that you know they're going to get big money right away. I mean, Bryce Young, Montana Fouts. I mean, you saw players at Alabama that were getting big money right away. And obviously, you're having to deal with this from a compliance standpoint. So how much did that change your world just instantly when NIL came along at Alabama?
I think for me, and it kind of goes back to what I said initially, being about relationships. Everybody has different experience with compliance. We deal with coaches, come from other schools. There's a lot of compliance offices out there that like to operate as an extension to the enforcement staff. I tell all of our student athletes at every beginning of the year meeting that the logo on my shirt is the same one that's on theirs. I don't operate as an extension to the NCAA. We work for the institution. We're here to help, and we're here to make sure things are done the right way and to protect us and to implement processes and procedures for doing things the right way and work through issues when we have them. So I don't take that kind of aggressive enforcement compliance approach, but it doesn't change the perception. And I think coaches come from that, and that kind of the experience the student athletes have is largely driven by what their coaches think. And for me, NIL was an opportunity to now work with student athletes towards something really positive.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, go from being called to the compliance office, what is the reaction to that versus you need to go see Taylor to talk about NIL opportunities and things like that. And that I felt was something that was really good for our whole department. So I tried to really represent well, I'm a member of the compliance staff and we're here to help.
So all of a sudden they were excited when they came to your office. 100%.
Yeah. which was a welcome change, I'll tell you, for a lot of people in our business. It really was. But it presented new challenges, presented questions we'd never been asked before. And being at a place like Alabama where things have to be done the right way, there's no way around it, was interesting. But yeah, to be able to work with some of our football student athletes and you know, I was Brandon Miller and Nick Dunlap, and there were some other people that I was able to work with that just, I felt the outside world is going to think what they think from a, you know, marketing, and they're operating like semi-professionals, but at the end of the day, they were college students, and to be a resource internally for them, they're getting hit from every direction with different information and different thoughts and opinions, and they've got agents that have their professional interest at heart. At the end of the day, we were just here to help, and we wanted to be as much of a resource as we could and try to keep them on the straight and narrow. And it got to a point, I think, with a lot of student athletes where they were confident in coming to us and even saying, hey, I know I have to give you this contract, but I'd really appreciate it if you would tell me what you think about it.
Let me kind of give you the outside view, because it was at this point in time when this is happening, I'm just a guy hosting a talk show. NIL comes about, and you think initially, my God, this is just going to be the Wild West. And then for 6-8 months, whatever it was, it kind of wasn't. It sort of started out almost like what you thought it was intended to be. Some kids may get some good endorsement deals, and other kids are getting paid to teach lessons or go to a birthday party. And then it sure seems like the reason it wasn't the Wild West is because it just took that while to find the loophole of sorts. And I say it because that's about how long it took for people to kind of figure out the collectives and get those on the ground. And then it seemed like, okay, well, now it'll be the Wild West a little bit.
Yeah, and I think the problem was governance environment of it all. Was you had different schools in different states operating by state laws, and then all these early state laws go into effect on July 1st, 2021. And on June 30th, 2021, true form and fashion, at the 11th hour, the NCAA issues their NIL policy. And what you've got is, so they say, if you have a state law, you're obligated to follow it. And if you don't, here's 5 or 6 bullet points. And what you saw initially, looking at loopholes, was, the NCAA policy is actually a lot more flexible than some of our state laws. So you saw schools like BYU and Utah doing things because they didn't have a state law. And you're like, wow, they have more flexibility than we do. And we had worked with our government officials to try to get a law on the books. And we're like, just to get around rules that the NCAA had put on hold and put a policy in place around. And we were actually the first state in Alabama to repeal our NIL law because we wanted to play in the governance environment that the NCAA had created because of some of the flexibility that was there. So I think a lot of the confusion and maybe even some of the apprehension around NIL and the way it was going to affect our industry was because no one really knew what rules you were playing by. And factor in the transfer market, you go from one school to another, they're going to have different things in place at different schools because different things were allowed.
I guess, too, just from your standpoint, and this is really across the board, but maybe from your side of the shop. NIL by itself is a seismic change to college athletics. The transfer portal by itself is a seismic change to college athletics. What's it like to deal with both at the same time?
Well, and maybe it's just my luck. I started working in compliance in the spring of 2015. It was 2014 that the O'Bannon case was decided and we had cost of attendance. And everybody said cost of attendance, seismic change to athletics too. Well, summer of 2018, I'm writing the transfer policy at Montana State because we've got this portal on the horizon in October of 2018. And then I ended up at Alabama. So yeah, I mean, I've been involved, I guess, throughout my whole career in some seismic changes or perceived seismic changes in college athletics. And I've always tried to take the mindset of staying flexible and being cautious in our approach, but, you know, trying to be conservative and cling to the ways of old are not going to be successful. So being a resource for our coaches and student athletes as things change, trying to help them understand what the changes are and where to go from here, it's ever evolving and it's not going to stop.
And you mentioned the coaches. I would think that the communication now between someone in your position and the head coaches has to be more frequent than ever because of everything that's constantly going on. And look, I know the end game is to just help out the student athlete. And you mentioned some of the things you're trying to do, whether it still be through scholarships or cost of attendance or NIL. You're trying to help the student athlete, but to do that, you've got to constantly be communicating with these coaches. And it's not just Coach Jones and Coach Hodson, but everybody who's at Arkansas State right now. Your phone stays very active on a daily basis.
Yeah, active. Daily, day, night, weekend, it doesn't really matter. And I think my wife will be the first one to tell you that, but she's great about it. Of course, she understands. And it is a time where a lot of people have a lot of questions and a lot of things are changing. And I do appreciate about our coaches, the ones you mentioned and the ones you didn't, I do think I have built some rapport with them and a relationship with them where they do feel confident in trusting the information I can give them. A lot of places don't have that luxury. And when you put coaches in a room to talk about these things together, you might imagine there's often bad information that gets shared. And I know our coaches will come back and say, hey, I heard this. Is this actually changing? And I'll say, you know, it might be. It's out there. It's not imminent. Or I'll say, no, I don't know where you heard that or why, but that's not reality. So I do, again, from a relationship standpoint, from a resource standpoint, I try to be a voice of reason for them amidst all the chaos.
How hard is it? I mean, again, compliance, by definition, when people think compliance, they think the rules. Now, they're either, depending on how you look at it, constantly changing, or in some ways, people feel like there are fewer and fewer of them, which is maybe not accurate. But, I mean, how hard is it, on top of everything else, to just keep up with where things are from a rules standpoint at any given time?
Well, this is where I have to look at the support that we have around us and say, you know, what is the Sun Belt doing to share information and what are we getting from the NCAA committees? And you talk about keeping up with the changing rules, it's not easy. And we've got now, with several injunctions in place, we've got court systems weighing in on the way that our business operates. And the court, as you might imagine, doesn't necessarily give you a full answer. So if they're going to enjoin certain transfer rules, there are going to be questions. We can't go to the NCAA, we can't go to the Sun Belt to interpret a court injunction. And the court's not going to bother because they're not in the daily operation like we are. So you have to, again, be the voice of reason, let everybody know you're trying your best to understand it, disseminate the information as we get it that we know is accurate. Try not to cause panic. I always say compliance takes a very level head and a great sense of humility. There's not a lot of people that are going to ring the compliance bell and tell you what a great job you did, but you'll hear from them when something's wrong. Our staff does a really good job of, you know, maintaining the day-to-day and the processing that we do and the things that we are responsible for. And there are still rules and there are still ways that we need to follow them and things that we need to have in place to make sure that we're operating in compliance as best we possibly can.
And not everyone in your role went to law school. Obviously, there's some that did, maybe even several. I don't know the splits, but they didn't all. But given what you said, kind of how much of an advantage is it to speak legalese and have been trained to read an injunction and kind of be able to decipher what it says?
Yeah, I think my answer to this has probably changed in the last 3 months. It's a different perspective. It's totally a different perspective. I think there's plenty of people that do this job and probably do it a lot better than me that didn't go to law school. I think being trained to think like a lawyer, having gone to law school, figuring out how to play in the gray and looking at bigger pictures, how to advocate, when we're writing waivers, when we're reporting violations, how do you paint things in a light most favorable to your client is a lot of what we do. But it's a different perspective. It's not a better perspective. In recent weeks, even, I think with some of the injunctions, is there's an advantage to it because you can at least understand some of the procedure involved and with the court systems and what's an injunction versus a temporary restraining order. At the end of the day, it really doesn't matter to our coaches. You're going to need to break it down for them in terms they can understand either way. But so how much of an advantage is it to our staff, which is who we're here to serve? I probably not much of one, but personally it makes me feel better because I kind of understand what's going on.
We've seen how much the goalposts have moved over the last 3 or 4 years, and even in this past year. You got your crystal ball. What's it going to look like in 5 years?
Man, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
I mean,
it might be the $2.8 billion question here.
Okay. Explain.
Yeah, I also would love for you, heck, forget the people listening, for me. Explain that's I know what you're talking about, but I need you to dumb it down for me.
Well, I want to say this first and foremost, because I do think this gets lost. College athletics is not one of those things that's too big to fail. I think a lot of people can get jaded and maybe think that. But I also think college athletics is an industry, if you look across the board, that's very special to a lot of people. And yes, it's a great source of revenue. Industries like that don't fold overnight. But it is something that's very special to a lot of people, and a lot of people are invested in protecting and maintaining. So can you imagine a world without college footballs on Saturday in the fall? I can't. So to say that it's just this is the end of college athletics, it's maybe not even as far as to say it's a new beginning, but you're going to continue to see change in the industry, and evolving interests over time I think are going to continue to contribute to the legislative environment we live in. In 5 years, where do I see college athletics? You know, given some of the current lawsuits that are out there, there are probably ways that we need to consider how revenue is shared across conferences, across institutions with student athletes. The easy, you know, anecdotal argument is look at the coach's salary versus look at what the student athletes are getting. And I'm not sure that's a great one, because we had a lot of data analysis at Alabama about how much was invested in every individual student athlete. And it can be upwards of six figures for one kid in 1 year. When you talk about a nutrition and a support staff and a, you know, even gear, they do receive quite a bit to be a student athlete here. And I haven't met one of them that's not grateful for that. So I think, unfortunately, some of the court cases that are out there paint this picture of the student athletes that are either significantly disadvantaged because of the way the system has worked and entitled to some kind of, you know, restitution is what we're talking about, or the ones that say the student athletes get plenty and it's greedy. And the reality is somewhere in the middle, and it depends on who you're talking to and who you hear it from. We, as an industry, have needed to change for a long time. And I think the NCAA gets a bad rap as kind of the boogeyman in all this, and they're the ones named as defendants in all the lawsuits. And what I try to remind people is that the NCAA is us. It's like the government. They're not elected officials, but they are these NCAA committees, the board of directors. They're all people from our schools, from our campuses. So you do have people in power like President Baker at the NCAA that have decision-making influence. But the ones at the end of the day that could have changed our legislative structure is us. And I don't think that we look ourselves in the mirror as much as we should.
So the student services part in your title, I mean, sort of the academic side of the shop is under that umbrella. You know, people hear APR and they would see the APR score, and maybe they didn't know anything about it besides knowing, hey, it needed to be so high for everything to be okay. But as you spin this thing forward, can the APR continue to exist in the era of unlimited transfers?
It probably needs to change. It probably needs to evolve along with the times, right? So if we're evolving some things, why are we not evolving all things? And I won't go as far as to say the APR is, you know, irrelevant, because I do think that the collegiate model of tying academics and the opportunity for young people to earn a degree in association with their ability and their talent to compete in a athletic team, I don't think that that's going to get lost. It's really hard for me to imagine a Alabama Crimson Tide LLC that is loosely affiliated with the University of Alabama. And I think going back to the industry that's being special to a lot of people, alumni from the University of Alabama aren't interested in that because the reason it's so special to them is because they're student athletes, just like they were students. And we have such deep personal connections to college athletics. And I think that's what makes it so special. So it's really hard for me to imagine that kind of dissociation of student athletes. You know, people talk about the employment model. I don't know that that's something that fits what we're doing, especially in the current market with transfers and everything else. You got to remember, as an employee, you're expected to perform. And if you don't, there are consequences to that. And I don't think we want to put young people in that position. You take the drastic approach, you say, well, the starting quarterback throws three interceptions, then you get fired. And that's true of all of us that work in the professional world as employees. But I don't really think that that fits what the goal of what we're doing is. So the employment model is hard to wrestle with. And, you know, you could get real in the weeds fast on some of the labor relations things and where the employment model fits and applies and where it doesn't. But, you know, I try to take the real 10,000 foot view before we get that far into the details. And yeah, I don't know. It's really hard to read hard into the future with so many changes happening at once.
You mentioned it because, and you can correct me if I'm wrong or certainly straighten up anything I mess up, but you kind of said the LLC approach, because there are people out there and there were some pretty people in some pretty big chairs that talked about spinning this thing forward to a point where you said the athletics department was just a place that paid for your logos. And the people that played on the teams that had the name of that school may or may not even have to be students there. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, that's I go back to having the personal connections of it. It's I grew up in Washington, D.C., and I'm very personally invested in all of the athletic teams in Washington. You know, I had all the jerseys. We went to all the games. But when I was at the University of Georgia, like, it doesn't compare to the same connection that you have there where your peers are out there competing. You know, you look at some of the traditions in college athletics and the rivalries in college athletics, and so much of it is tied to longstanding institutional things. Even the names of the stadiums are, Bryant Denny Stadium was a coach and a university president. And I think that right there is kind of your example of how closely tied those two things are. And the institutional support that we get here is outstanding, and that needs to happen. I mean, you're a partner in your campus and everything that you do. And when we're talking about recruiting, we had our head coaches meeting this morning, and Joel Winkowski's our vice chancellor for enrollment management. He came to that meeting to talk about, you know, this is how we're recruiting to A-State, and this is what we're trying to do with enrollment, and we want to collaborate with athletics to figure out how you're recruiting. You know, what are you going to sell about your programs, about our university, when you're pitching to these high profile recruits? Yeah. And because it is effectively the same game that they're playing. And I think that right there tells you the kind of cross-functional relationships that you have to have on campus. So yeah, it is really hard to think about a business kind of ancillary to the university.
Well, it's a fascinating time in your role, everything you're doing. And that's kind of why I asked you about the five-year question, because who would have thought 5 years ago that we'd be living in a time in 2024 with unlimited transfers and NIL? And I don't think there's many people that would have predicted that. Maybe some, but I don't think there's a whole lot of people that would have. And now it's still evolving right now. So
yeah, it absolutely
get
is.
Get ready. It's not ending anytime soon.
To that point there, though, I think is why in 2018, who would have thought we would be here? In 2018, when I started at Alabama, when I left 5 years later, I couldn't have told you what the world was going to look like. The same thing stands true today. I can't tell you what it's going to look like in 5 years, but I hope to still be a part of it. I've taken on a whole new appreciation for what college athletics is, having been on the inside of it and getting to work with some really great people and support some really great student athletes.
Now, because of, you know, the NIL initiatives part of your job, number one, that part is going to continue to evolve. The amount of stuff I think that can come under the roof of the athletic department will continue to evolve. But you sort of also have been the contact person, the liaison with the Impact Club for Arkansas State. So, you know, we've seen big numbers come through there and drives to match gifts for this, that, and the other thing. It feels like for having to start from scratch not very long ago that they've made up some ground in somewhat short order on that side of things.
Yeah, they have. And we've got a really great partnership with the Impact Club. And a few weeks ago, I went to a board meeting and I told them this, that I commend what they had to do, because, you know, at Alabama, we had a lot of people step up and be willing, and we collaborated with some attorneys and business owners and people, and how can we really put together a functional collective? How do we structure something that we don't know what we need? And I think that was a big challenge. So for the Impact Club to do that on their own and with institutional influence and support and try to identify what the needs are is something that, like, you guys took something and built it without any kind of blueprint. And you've put people in executive roles without any kind of job description. And you've just continued to rise to the challenge and meet the needs of what the current environment calls for. So they've been great. Appreciate everyone's support for them. And yeah, it's a reality of our business, and NIL's not going away. And I tell people this too, is if you go, if you look at the pro leagues and if we evolve to something with a revenue share or collective bargaining or employment or however you want to throw the dice, is the environment with NIL is not going away, because you look at some of these professional players that do have endorsement deals, and there's a reason that LeBron James is going to do better in Los Angeles than he was going to do in Cleveland. And you look at some of the free agency and market recruiting, it matters. So how much of a market can you create for yourself? How much value can you create for yourself being here at Arkansas State? And what can the Impact Club do to help you promote your brand and find partnerships and opportunities in the community?
And I'm glad you brought that up, because the reality is, and we've got some great student athletes that could probably make a whole lot more money other places. But because of the Impact Club and what they've done, the Jalen Rayners, the Isaiah Nelsons, we're able to retain players like that. It's making a big difference in their lives. And I know those are just a couple of examples there. But because of what the Impact Club has done in a very short amount of time, you're right. They should be commended for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And NIL didn't legalize anything that wasn't already legal. The Alston case didn't suddenly permit NIL for student athletes. Your right to publicity has been around forever. And what we had was a population of people that was not able to take advantage of it because their status as a student athlete and the NCAA rules at the time precluded them from doing so. So what we've now done is say, hey, you can take advantage of this the same way every college student can be an influencer on social media and get paid for it and get swag bags from companies that they like and want to partner with. And just kind of throwing them into that environment without some guidance or without people to help them and support them and try to steer the ship locally, at least, is irresponsible. So I think what the Impact Club has done has been great. And, I've tried to do everything I can to keep that relationship strong and support them from the institutional side as well.
I know the coaches around here, I'll kind of wrap up my side with this, but I know they think a lot of you. There's reason for that, because number one, you're a positive guy, you're a good guy, and what you want to try to do is figure out how you can do something instead of telling them why they can't. But I think somebody that has that kind of attitude is going to have a lot of success, and the athletic programs are going to have a lot of success because of it. But that seems to be your attitude, and man, we're glad to have you here at Arkansas State.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm glad to be here. And you're exactly right. If you take the approach in compliance, we talked about it a little bit already, but if you take that the other approach, you're not going to make a lot of friends. And you may be really, really good at your job, but there's people that are really, really good at their job trying to be an asset, trying to be a resource, and trying to come to a creative yes or a no, but we can do it this way, or just trying to find solutions. It's not always easy, and sometimes we have to have some difficult conversations. I can't beat around the bush with that, but it's a lot of fun. And if you appreciate what you're doing and it matters to you, then you want to work towards those solutions for your coaches.
Right. Do you want to be viewed as an asset or something that sounds similar?
You mentioned your wife earlier, Ansley. Fantastic. And I know that you got your boy Charlie here as well, and you guys are enjoying Jonesboro.
Yeah, it's been awesome. Jeff will tell you this now, it's a good joke, but obviously across the country there is a great shortage of childcare. And, Charlie was born in March last year and he just turned one. But as I was talking to Jeff last year, Charlie was a month, 2 months old. And I said, one of the things that really might get me excited about coming up there to join you would be if you could help find us a place at daycare. He said he would work on it, and we had some people in the community that maybe owned some places, and so we ended up actually getting a spot on campus at the Child Development Center, and they have been probably the best thing about coming to Jonesboro, and he is thriving, and that makes our lives a lot easier as parents to be able to go in and work hard knowing he's well cared for. And Brad and I were talking about it before you walked in, but we actually have another one on the way who will get here in November.
Oh, man,
so,
congratulations.
Yeah, as football season kind of wraps up and basketball season gets started, we will throw that one into the mix too and just see what happens.
Man, that's exciting stuff. That's Taylor Hall joining us here on the Second to None podcast. We've got more to come right after this.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle, get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
This is Coach Brian Hodson, and I'm asking you to help our A-State student-athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This organization helps our program stay competitive and supports our student-athletes by facilitating NIL agreements that allow them to endorse local charities. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact spelled I-M-P-A-C-K-T Club.com. Your support makes a real difference in the lives of our student-athletes. Wolves up.
And we welcome you back into the Second to None podcast presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. Baseball saw their season come to an end over the weekend in Monroe, dropping the final three games of the season to ULM, led in all three of those games. Don't want to spend too much time just going through each game, but led 4-2 going into the bottom of the seventh of the first game. There were two rain delays in that one. We ended up getting suspended on Thursday night. We finished the game, actually had to start back up in the bottom of the eighth, which was kind of weird on Friday afternoon. And just playing a bottom of the eighth and a top of the ninth and then having a break between games. I think I was on the air for about 30 minutes and then took an hour break and then got ready to call game two. And led in that game early on, got off to a quick start and ended up losing that one as well. Then the one that just ripped your heart out was the final game of the season. And look, you knew it was the last game of the year for both the Red Wolves and ULM. Neither one of them going to Montgomery for the conference tournament this week. So you wanted to have at least a little bit of a good taste in your mouth going into the offseason and led that game pretty much the entire way. In fact, we're up 6-5 in the bottom of the ninth with a two-strike count, not once but twice, and two outs. Just couldn't get that final call. And
didn't get a check swing, right?
Didn't get a check swing, and then there was a pitch earlier in the count that I don't know how it missed, but they did not want to call strike three. I thought the game should have been over twice before they eventually hit the two-run single up the middle to win it, and ULM able to win the game 7-6. I guess the biggest bright spot, and I was so happy for Jared Toler going out the way he did, and we've talked about him a lot, but he goes 5-for-5 in his final game as a Red Wolf with a home run. And I think every single one of the balls he hit, all the hits, were over 100 miles an hour on the exit velo. He was crushing everything that he hit the other day. It was really fun to see him go out the way he did in his senior season last game. And so he hit two home runs this year. One was on senior day and one was on the final day of the regular season.
But he did a lot of hitting in that last month, 5 weeks, whatever it was. I mean, he really played as well as anybody, to be honest with you, during that stretch. And good to see, and we've talked about that before, kind of looked like he burst onto the scene and then all of a sudden kind of had to wait for his number to come back up. And when it did, he was ready to deliver instead of sitting over there pouting.
Now we go into the offseason, and Tommy Raffo, I brought it up in several of our interviews over the weekend, whether they be pregame or postgame. Talked about it with Drew LeBounty as well, just kind of the approach going into the offseason. And it's going to be a really different looking roster next year. And they've already got 13 pitchers coming in next season, 9 right-handed, 4 left-handed. And that's something we really haven't had a lot of the last several years, is just that left-handed pitching depth. And it really shows up in some big moments. It would have been nice to be able to go to a left-hander late in games. So that's a big point of emphasis as far as the offseason and recruiting. And then you've seen it as well. The top teams in the league are really, really left-handed heavy in the lineup.
It's interesting, but yeah.
But the best teams are in our conference. And, man, did we see it against Southern Miss week before last?
Yeah.
That's one big thing that Coach Raffo's trying to do is try to load up on those left-handed bats going into next year as well.
It is interesting. Yeah, we know what the Sun Belt is as a baseball league, but it's also a really left-handed league. Everybody seems to have them. And like I said, Southern Miss, I mean, what, you know, six or seven lefties in the lineup on a given day a couple weekends ago. So it is a point of emphasis. And Coach Trawick's come in, and you, as you said, they already got 13 pitchers committed. So, and number one, it's going to be an overhaul because – there were a ton of seniors. You had to read the senior day. You know how long it was?
Well, and two of them didn't even get announced on senior day. So we had 17 seniors.
Yeah, I mean, that were still there at the end of the year. Yeah. So the that's half the roster, basically. It was seniors. So that in and of itself tells you that there's going to be a lot of new faces in here in 2025.
We'll take another timeout here. Be back to wrap things up on the Second to None podcast right after this.
At First National Bank, our mortgage lending team knows what it takes to make a home and a superior home loan process. Simple, proven, and reliable service with competitive rates at a bank that already feels like home. Since 1889, that's been the First National Bank way, because for our people, this is home. Apply online at fnbank.net/mortgage. From our family to yours. Welcome home. First National Bank. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Coach Butch Jones, and we need you to help our A-State athletic programs by donating to the Impact Club. This is an organization that is making a real difference in the lives of our student athletes. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access that you will not find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact spelled ImpactClub.com. Your support is greatly appreciated and is helping our programs right now. Wolves up.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast presented by First National Bank and by the Cavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at CavanaughCars.com. Track and field, with several athletes going to the NCAA West prelims this week in Fayetteville. Excited about that. Hannes Fall competing in the men's 800. Colby Eddowes, former podcast guest, competing in the 110-meter hurdles. Josh Jones in the 400-meter hurdles. Willem Kurtzen in the men's shot put. Salise Sampram and Michelle Ogbemudia in the women's shot put. And Menachem Chen in the men's discus. So a really good representation for the track and field team as they compete in the West prelims coming up this week in Fayetteville.
Yeah, and even that, I mean, is not what they're accustomed to, even for as good as it is, right? I mean, and it just goes back to what I talked about last week. And honestly, I finally got to spend a little bit of time chatting with one of the staff members one day late last week and got a sense of just how beat up they were, just the different stuff they dealt with that kind of made them limited at the conference meet. And it really was something. So I know that group collectively, they're all kind of chomping at the bit to get back at it because they didn't get to do what they set out to do. But it's good that these groups right here, these are the last A-State student athletes competing this year. And that's typically the case, and glad to see this many of them.
Congrats to the men's golf team. What a fantastic season they had. Of course, we've talked a lot about their Sun Belt Conference championship victory. We had Thomas Schmidt in here a couple of weeks ago. I had a great visit with him and ended up going to the Austin Regional, the NCAA tournament, this past week. And they finished ninth out of that field. And it's the second best NCAA finish in program history. And in the regional, they finished ahead of number 8, Arkansas.
Hmm.
That's pretty neat. Number 60, San Jose State. Number 71, Grand Canyon. And number 142, Kansas City. So some really good competition that they finished in front of.
Yeah. Look, was the goal to go finish top 5 and get to the NCAA championship?
Sure.
Yeah. So they didn't win a regional, but they won a state title. So
they sure did. And beat a top 10 team while
honestly, we kid about that, but it really doesn't matter what name is beside the number 8. Just if that's who you beat, then you know you had a good week.
The other thing that's going on right now is the Hal on Wheels events, and they started Monday night in Memphis. And I got to tell you, What a great place we were at. The Soul and Spirits Brewery in Memphis. Have you ever been to this place?
I have not, but it's run by a former Miss Arkansas State.
Blair Perry and her husband, Ryan, they own the place, and they couldn't have been more delightful. They and their staff, everybody that was working behind the bar, behind the scenes the other night, every one of them an A-State alum.
So really? I had not heard that part.
That was a really neat touch on Monday night, and we had a great crowd on hand out there. Just a really neat event, and that was our first one. We're recording this on Tuesday afternoon, so I know this episode's coming out on Wednesday, but as we record, we're getting ready to go up to Paragould here in the next few hours and get ready for our second event. Do want to encourage everybody in Central Arkansas that is able to on Thursday night. We're going to be on the rooftop at the ASU System Office Thursday night for that Howl on Wheels event. And, man, we had a great time there last year. I know you went down as well for that one. And, man, just a great chance to catch up with Coach Jones, Coach Hodson, Jeff Purinton, Dr. Shields. I know Destiny Rogers is at several of these events as well. So it's fun getting up there and never know what you might learn.
Well, if you're an Arkansas State person, especially one in Central Arkansas, and you've not ever had a reason or a chance to go to the system office, number one, you should just do that. It's the only place around with a view that challenges mine in terms of kind of what
you see.
You got a
pretty good
view. I got a real good view, but they do too. The view at the system office is really cool.
Look out at the Capitol.
It's a neat setting, and this is actually a combined event with the Alumni Association, so I think the turnout would be really cool. Looking forward to seeing a bunch of people in Little Rock Thursday night.
Lots of fun tidbits. I'll tell you one from Memphis. So Coach Hodson's up there, and he's talking about how difficult it is right now to schedule, as you would expect.
Yeah.
Really tough to get games after you win 20 and you've got a loaded squad coming back, number one recruiting class. He did mention he ran into Coach Calipari this past week. And you remember the tweet he sent out.
Yes.
Challenging Coach Cal when he got hired over at Arkansas.
I'd say welcoming and inviting. Now, challenging is probably a little bit of a harsh connotation.
Well, okay.
Welcoming to the state and making sure Coach Cal knew that the door was open.
Yes, he would welcome a game. He said that when he brought it up in person with Coach Cal, that he was warmer than he thought he would be about it, and they're going to catch up again about that very topic here in the coming days. So who knows how that might transpire, but wouldn't that
so
be
So he's
fun?
Already gotten further than the previous regime over there.
Yeah, I don't think...
I just like to leak to their media that we wouldn't drop a contracted game with other people
A conference game.
On their whim, during the pandemic, so we must not have wanted to play that bad.
I guess not, but...
You still have a chance to win your division? Well, who cares? We might need a game.
Would certainly welcome that game, though. I know our fans would be excited about it. Fans around the state.
And I'll say this. I do have a few friends that work over at the University of Arkansas. In all kinside, I'll say this. They've had nothing but good things to say about their dealings so far with Coach Calipari and his staff. They've sang their praises. Just sort of how relatable and honestly how nice they are, to be honest with you. So look at that. If I'm going to throw them that bone.
Man, this better get done now. That was the last thing I think anybody was expecting to hear out of you. But that's kind of one of the fun tidbits that we found out on Monday night. And yeah, you do get some inside information at these events. So who knows what else might be coming up on the horizon here. Anything else we need to talk about?
No, I think that'll do it. I'll say this, even as we're doing this on Tuesday, got our eye on the forecast, making sure it's not too dicey on Thursday night, but hopefully that won't be the case, and we'll plow right ahead as scheduled.
All right. Thanks again to Taylor Hall coming in. Enjoyed our conversation with him. For Brad, I'm Matt. Have a great week, everybody.